You're listening to Zoomer, Crooners, and Songbirds, hosted by Canada's own prolific singer-songwriter, Lily Frost. Lily explores music, themes, artists, and sometimes special guests which cross musical genres and eras, and introduces you to unmined gems that might not have made it onto your playlists.
Opinions in this show do not necessarily reflect those of the host or of Zoomer Radio.
Welcome to Zoomer Crooners and Songbirds. I'm Lily Frost. Tonight's show is a special conversation, as well as music, with a unique German anthroposophist, author, classical music conductor, and raw milk farmer and activist, Michael Schmidt. Michael spoke with me about where he comes from, how he runs his farm, his philosophy based on Steiner's anthroposophy, and the Waldorf school system. Anthroposophy is a way of life that connects nature and farming in a spiritual, artistic way. There are crossovers with culture and agriculture, and Michael will share why he is an activist for freedom of choice to put into our body what we wish based on education, and how he's willing to die for his beliefs. His raw milk farm has been raided multiple times, his equipment confiscated, and he has been incarcerated. But yet he keeps on going. He's responsible for bringing the grain spelt to America, and he won't stop fighting for his beliefs. This is my interview with Michael Schmidt at his farm in Glen Colton, Ontario. I found it really interesting, the idea of how music interconnects with nature, and that music is rhythmic and so is farming, because in your philosophy, you're following the rhythms of seasons, the sun, the day. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
The whole philosophy of farming nowadays is a war against nature. We need to kill the weeds. We need to, you know, have big tractors to manage everything. And it seems like war, war, war all over. But if you change that, or if you change your whole philosophy that you actually want to work together with nature, then the only way is if you understand truly the rhythm, you know, how plants work, how animals work. I mean, animals nowadays, even they control the cycle of cows in order to breed them in the right way and stuff like that. And we trying really hard to understand the inner rhythm of nature in order to really get to the essence of what makes things grow instead of forcing them. So it's a reversal of approach to nature, that you actually work with nature instead against nature. I was always a child who was deeply connected to these things. And I mean, it helped that I went to a Waldorf school, but at the same time, I was always extremely creative. And let's call it, I was always bursting with ideas. Crazy ideas.
Like what kinds of ideas?
I loved music. You know, music was just, I was bathing in music.
As a child?
As a child.
You listened, it was playing all the time around you, or you were playing?
Well, I was playing, and it was playing around in Europe. I mean, it's such a great tradition that the parents take you to really good concerts, and it's not about rock or pop, but classical concerts. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up with that. And it didn't take long. I always, for example, watched the conductors and was trying to figure out what is the magic of a conductor. I could then compare myself to what the conductor was doing in regards to the interpretation of the music. I really explored at very early age how you can actually sculpture music with your hands and work with the musicians and so on. So I founded my first orchestra when I was 15 or 16.
Really?
I founded the Stuttgart Youth Chamber Orchestra and conducted that for quite a few years. And that gave me really, you know, the foundation of being confident that I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Anthroposophy is the wisdom of the human being, in a way. Sophia is wisdom, and the human being. I think it is a spiritual approach to understand the world in its totality. I think we're so focused You know, when you think about the digitalization of the world, it's all put in little pixels. Everything is put in, you know, even broken up in little boxes. Yeah. And when we look at the whole of everything, then you realize how everything works together in a beautiful way, and that matter cannot work without spirit, let's put it this way, and vice versa. Bruno Walter, for example, the great conductor, he wrote in his biography, he wrote that once he was acquainted with anthroposophy, suddenly he truly understood the importance of music. Before, it was just beauty, it was just, you know, amazing what to do. But the spiritual importance of music, he discovered through anthroposophy. And so the approach of anthroposophy on many levels, for example, education of the child, I think is remarkable. When you look at today's education system, how it fails a lot of children because it's all, you know, mass production of knowledge, but not educating the child as a whole.
So Waldorf schooling is based on Steiner's philosophy, which is anthroposophy.
Yeah.
And so Waldorfian child school day is much more hands-on, right, than a regular school day where you just sit in a chair and listen.
Listen and feeding the intellect. I think Waldorf education is clearly more feeding the creative side of the human being. So filling up an individual with knowledge, it does not give him the ability to be actually creative in the world. And at some point, everyone will recognize the limitations, their own limitations, because they have not developed a proper creative side to them. So the hands-on approach, I mean, there's, for example, I learned knitting in the Waldorf school.
Right.
And they found out through research that as more you do handwork, as better actually your creative mind works and evolves. And when you overload your mind through intellectual, you know, just a child needs to start reading with 4 years old or 5 years old or do math is actually detrimental because it overstretches the capacity of a child. And then later on, it starts collapsing because it can't handle it. So you strengthen the creative side, and then out of that creative stream, the intellect develops.
And to define creativity would be doing things with your hands or creating.
Well, yeah, creating art or even, for example, learning math in a playful and artful way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Like Rob, one of the teachers here, he uses sticks.
Exactly.
To tap rhythms to teach.
Yes.
Math. Can I ask you about your spiritual connection to farming and what you see as spirit and what you see as soul? Because you said something like, when you see the sunrise, it moves your spirit and then it becomes a soul experience where your soul rings.
Farming itself, I think, is spiritual because it's a constant dialogue with nature. And in a way, I think that aligns completely. And that is not a romantic, you know, kind of notion here. It aligns completely with the understanding of the indigenous community or the original indigenous community, you know, to have a deep reverence towards nature and truly understand the spirit of nature. You might call them the elemental beings at work in nature, which so-called modern people have no way to recognize or to experience. But if you seek a different approach to farming, then it certainly becomes a spiritual journey. And for me, to experience that through observation or through the experience, and, you know, we talked about the sunrise. Sunrise and sunsets always affects people. The crazy thing is that people nowadays say, well, it's just like in the movies, you know. They think everything what is really beautiful in nature is like a movie, which should be exactly the opposite, you know. But out of that, then comes this seeking, you know, on a deeper level, and there comes music in. You experience something very beautiful. But in order to affect your soul, music is actually the key to open your soul for new experiences. And music can be in different kind of forms. It can be, for example, that you truly experience the chorus of birds, you know, wild birds singing. A lot of people don't recognize that unless you open your ears to it. And there are so many sounds in nature. And then complement that with man-made music, which at the end is also, you know that as a songwriter.
I can relate to the getting out of the way to allow the music to flow through you as a vessel.
Exactly.
And when you describe that with nature, get out of the way. Don't force, but recognize the blessing that the earth is giving you and work with it and be grateful for that, as opposed to trying to force it with pesticides or GMOs or whatever it is to get more.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the interesting part of that is also, I always try to explain people and say, you know, when they say, well, as a conductor, isn't it cool to be, you know, in control of everything? I said, I don't remember that. I remember when I get on the podium and I remember when I get off. But in between, you act as a vessel. Things flow through you.
Yeah.
And when your ego is not in the way.
And that's the connection.
And that is the connection.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that is the fascinating part where people say, well, you're a conductor and a farmer, how can you combine that? It's not hard to do that because farming, you always look at the balance that everything harmonizes with each other. So farming is like a big orchestra.
So many elements at play.
Yes.
And then also I loved, you know, the idea of a sunrise or a sunset and that feeling of an orchestra, say in a crescendo, for example, being like a sunrise.
Exactly.
And creating that similar effect.
And another thing, even machines in farming are quite creative. The milking machine has a rhythm, which always goes dung, 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 dung. I solved a lot of conducting problems just by milking cows. Because it's a rhythmic thing.
Yeah. You came to Canada in 83, is that right?
83. I was 28.
28.
When we left Germany.
Who's we? You left with your first wife.
With my first wife and four children. And then we came here. And, you know, this what they say, Canada is the best country in the world. And you're so free to do everything. The reality is different.
It is different. It absolutely is. And, the promo is off.
It wasn't a shock to me, but it was, in a way, an interesting experience for me because I love obstacles. Hmm. Always felt if they throw a stone in your way, I jump over it. And if they put two stones in your way, you just jump higher. So you just learn jumping higher and higher. That was always my challenge. And since I love challenges, it didn't bother me. But it certainly affected my family and it affected the farm as a whole. The point here is that here is a marketing system in Canada,
yeah,
which basically controls everything in regards to the production and the distribution of milk in general. Not about raw milk, just in general. And so you have to have a license to operate a plant. You have a license to have cows. You have a license, you know, to transport milk, all these things. And I knew that before I came to Canada. But I thought, you know, you can talk to people and explain that there's a need and you work on it. And then through proper dialogue, you would be able to do that. Because it's not that I want to do that, but that there is a need for people for good food.
So can you explain to me what the benefits of raw milk are compared to pasteurized?
Well, there is something interesting. When you look at a complete food, raw milk is the most complete substance because
it has the fat.
It has all the fat in it and all the enzymes and all the vitamins in it. When you pasteurize, you actually kill the enzymes, which enables you to digest the milk properly.
Right.
So by pasteurizing, you're extending the shelf life, but the nutrition is not anymore available as it should be.
Yeah.
And then the protein actually becomes detrimental for your own, you know, that the body starts rejecting. And that is where you get so many milk allergies, the lactose intolerance, because you just don't have the enzymes.
Yeah.
And then they have to buy enzymes in order to digest the milk. You know, it's kind of
similar to sourdough in a way.
It's very similar to sourdough, yeah.
the bacteria allows your body to digest it properly.
Actually, the bacteria improve your entire immune system.
Yeah.
And you don't have them in the pasteurized milk.
Right.
You have the proteins there,
yeah,
but not really the healthy bacteria.
And that's why people are taking probiotics.
Exactly. We provide the whole package. Enzymes, probiotic, and good taste. Every country in Europe has raw milk, even in the normal supermarket.
Is the main reason for the pasteurization that they want to keep the shelf life longer?
Well, originally pasteurization, I think, had a good reason because the production originated in the countryside and then they brought the milk into the big cities.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't refrigerated?
And there was no proper refrigeration. There was no stainless steel. And, you know, all these...
So it's an outdated law in a way.
Basic hygienic, you know, principles we're applying today weren't available.
Right. So it's outdated.
It is outdated, but at the same time, it has also a certain control mechanism, because this way you can actually control every farmer. You know, he has to comply, and if he doesn't comply, you know, there are fines and typical.
Which you have experienced. You've been raided 3 times now?
4 times.
Imprisoned?
Yeah, yeah. I went to jail. All these things are part of that journey, which is not a bad thing, but it's hard sometimes on your own family. I mean, with my first wife, for example, it came to a point where she said, I don't want to see police anymore. And my kids grew up always being confronted with that there's police coming again and raiding us at night and stuff like that.
At night?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. And they took your equipment as
well. And then they took equipment.
So you had to start again. And you also went on a 5-week hunger strike?
I was almost 40 days on a hunger strike in order to meet with the premier.
Oh, my God.
Which worked. The premier finally caved in and we had a meeting at Queen's Park. He promised me that I can make a presentation to his caucus. And then he resigned and then everything was off the table. So it was,
but
everything
were
was
you
lost.
Drinking anything? I mean,
just water. I was amazed how long I was able to do that. But it was crunch time, I have to say. It was crunch time.
Wow. So obviously you're passionate enough to put your own life on the line for your beliefs.
I always say, if you are not willing to die for your ideas, then it's not worth living. For me, the issue was not about milk. For me, the issue was that this basic principle, if people make a decision, a conscious and educated decision, that they need something for their own health, then they should have a right to exercise that and
yes,
to make that choice. In so many ways, you have so many choices, legal choices to kill yourself. So why not make a choice? To an informed choice to make yourself healthy. However, if the policy says, no, it's dangerous, and then they come with all the data which shows that somebody died about 100 years ago and how bad it was and that they didn't want to return. I mean, the chief medical officer of here accused me of that I went on a hunger strike to legally kill Canadians. That is what he publicly said and wrote in an open letter to the premier.
Let's talk about Symphony in the Barns.
Okay.
And the reconciliation that you're doing with the First Nations and have been doing since way before it became a popular thing. And you had First Nations performing while someone from a ballet tradition danced to it, and or people from both from Western culture or Canadian culture mixing with the First Nations around a drum circle or a fire pit and actually practically coming together through the heartbeat of the drum and the music. I think that it's not just lip service. People are experiencing the connection. And it would be great to continue that forward. Are you planning to do more of those?
Well, instinctively, when I came from Europe, there was one thing which shocked me when we drove through this area and then we ended up at the Saugeen Reserve close to Southampton. And I looked at the houses and how dilapidated. And I thought a lot about that. In Europe, they glorify the Indians in the movies. The Indians were glorified, you know. And the reality looked completely different. And thinking about what they always say about Canada, that's the best country in the world. And then I looked at that and I thought, no, that looks more like third world country. So I envisioned trying to figure out, you know, where is there a common language? And it came about because I was the conductor of the Saugeen Children's Choir. And there were little native girls in there. And in a way, I saw the beauty and the innocence in their eyes and realized how the neglect actually destroys the life of them.
Yeah.
And the neglect not through parents, but through the system. But through that, because of them in the choir, I connected with the chief of Saugeen Reserve up there, Richard Kagi. And we talked a lot. And then we got rated for the milk. And then he phoned me up and said, Michael, do you want to come up to the reserve? Because they can't touch you when you're in the reserve.
Wow.
And then you can start a farm there and provide food for the reserve.
Wow.
And, you know, I thought a lot about that. And then I'm not the person who tries to escape. And we were here already 10 years. I didn't want to change again.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, no, I can do it from here as well. And then out of that, I connected with Basil Johnson. He is a very famous native writer, and talked to him about this project, the idea of creating something where we don't impose our culture on them or they impose the culture on us, but how we can actually, through the event, create something together. And certainly, you know, my heart is beating a lot for dialogue. And then came this whole question, you know, how can we incorporate that in this so-called classy music, or what they always say, for it's only for the elite. And I always felt, no, the music needs to be available for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that evolved the idea of, with the choir and orchestra, at that time it was the Kitchener-Waterloo Symphony Orchestra, to create this event where we perform Haydn's Creation, which is based on the biblical story, and then the natives would tell their story of creation, and we put it side by side, and people could then experience it without judging anything, but experience, and then realize, wow, we actually not very far apart in our, you know, in our devotion to understand where we are coming from. And that was, in a way, overwhelming to realize, you know, what we had discovered at that time. And in 1995, I don't remember that Arts Council or anybody mandated you to recognize natives, you know, and this land acknowledgement, what you literally have to do nowadays in order to be politically correct. I reject political correctness just for the sake of funding or whatever. I'd rather be free and, you know, kind of really try hard to, from the ground up, develop a proper relationship. As soon as it becomes a political issue, it doesn't work. So the work we did with the natives, which is still continuing today, and we still have big plans with them in regards to their amphitheater, which was built a long time ago and is rebuilt now, that we actually can have their performance space where we both meet unconditionally.
Yeah.
And where
it's
the,
a beautiful space.
Yeah, and where the creative element really can thrive.
Yes.
If it's confined, you know, and I say if it's politically confined, the creativity goes down.
One thing just to let listeners know that you do offer here is summer camps for children to experience whole other reality.
The practical approach, for example, to farming, it's not about, you know, informing them how farming works, but that they actually come here and take the warm eggs out of the nest where the chickens lay their eggs. It is such a profound experience for them. A warm egg, freshly laid, or that they milk cows with us, or they feed the pigs with us. It's all hands-on for them to experience that. And, you know, we do that now for over 25 years, and I have adults coming here, and they said they never forgot that experience.
I've never touched a warm egg.
It's about time.
Yeah, because a lot of children or people in general don't know where their food comes from, and they think a hamburger is just... they have no idea where things come from, you know?
It's all about connections. I mean, inner connections to you know, understanding where things are coming from. The convenience store is a good name, actually, but the supermarket, you know, is pretty cool when you think about it. You can get everything there, mm-hmm. but it, at the same time, disconnects you, actually. And when they say, well, we need to feed the world, and I say, well, you know, first of all, don't throw so much food away. The other thing is maybe look at your lawn. You could turn your lawn into a really good vegetable garden.
Yeah.
Which can be also very creative and beautiful if yeah. you do it right.
Yeah.
You know, and people actually looking for the activity, the gardening activity, that's seems to be where they can connect with, they're yearning for something real, and working with the soil is something very real. I think that's the difference between the entertainment industry nowadays,
right,
where you think in terms of 20,000 people seeing a show or whatever, but the intimate experience for people to experience something real.
Mm-hmm.
So there is performing with a purpose, writing a song with a purpose, you know, what is something which really is dear to your heart, has, I think, much more effect than these big glossy shows. Everything has its place.
Yeah.
I'm not condemning it. I went through the Sky Dome also.
Who did you see?
I saw, he died. What's his name? David Bowie.
Wow.
Yeah, David Bowie.
That must have been great. Yeah.
It was really good.
Yeah.
David Bowie is still an artist with a real, real, you know, kind of purpose.
Agreed. And he changed so much with the times.
Totally.
And he always connected to younger people who informed
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
So he was relevant always.
Absolutely.
Even made his death part of his art.
I love that. I totally love that.
I want to thank raw milk farmer, activist, and classical conductor Michael Schmidt for sharing his time, perspective, philosophy, and music today for all of you listening to this special edition of Zoomer Crooners and Songbirds on Zoomer Radio. I'm Lily Frost. Have a wonderful night.